Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Waltrip Unfiltered. We've got another great show for you today. We're coming off a very thrilling All-Star Saturday night at Charlotte Motor Speedway. The Monster Energy Cup stars were set on go, and what a great race we saw. It started with the open, those thrilling finishes with Bubba Wallace getting a stage win and William Byron doing so as well, and then Kyle Larson getting the last spot into the Monster Energy All-Star race. And wow, did he ever take advantage of that? Listen to this. On pit road, I told two or three people, and I don't remember if I said it on TV or not, but I said, I'm going to bet on guys that have a K in their name or they're Kyle Larson. Those were my picks. And I meant Kyle Busch. I meant Kevin Harvick. And I meant Kurt Busch. Kurt come up a little short. He was my sentimental favorite because he's got Monster Energy on the side of his car. But man, were those other picks pretty much spot on. That was awesome racing, and I loved every minute of it. And I love every minute of the show we have today. Joining me, Fox Sports' Shannon Spake. She's going to talk about her life, which is crazy. She's a mom of two beautiful twins, nine-year-olds, a loving wife. She also does Fox for NASCAR, does Fox for the NFL, and she's training for two half Ironmans this year. You're going to learn all about that. How does she do all this? We're going to find out right now.
Green flag.
Welcome to Waltrip Unfiltered. Shannon Spake, I really appreciate you joining me.
You are welcome, my friend.
I have so many things to tell you because this is my 14th podcast.
Well, I'm honored.
Well, I appreciate you coming, but this is so cool because of the previous 13, they're all race car drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was basically interviewing them, and I felt like I was in charge. You know, it's Mike. I'm asking the questions. I know their story. I mean, you can see the results, you know, the struggles, the challenges. And then comes episode 14 and Shannon shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have known you for years and I appreciate you listening. You're doing a great job. And of knowing you for years, know your story. I know you have twins and a lovely husband and just a fun girl. But I have never interviewed someone that interviews people. So I'm a little bit nervous. I'm really excited because I want to ask you questions,
mm-hmm.
but then I hope they inspire you to ask me questions. So
let's
instead
do it.
Of it being like just me talking about you, you can talk about me.
Let's have a conversation.
Yes, it'll be conversational.
There you go.
Why in the world did you get married in Ireland?
So I was just filling you in. Honestly, my husband and I were sitting at a bar, at a pub one night with his family. His family is Irish, and my family is Irish as well. And we kind of just said to each other, hey, if we get married one day, what do you think about doing it in Ireland? And this was early on. We weren't even engaged yet. And so we actually got engaged in Italy and then married in Ireland. So we're both Italian and Irish, and we kind of think it's cool that it kind of covered both of those bases.
Wow.
So in 2006, we went to Italy. His mother is actually first generation. So we went to this small little town in Assurgi, Italy, which is just about 2 hours outside of Rome, for their Feast of the Assumption, which is when they walk through the streets carrying the statue of Mary, and they do this whole thing. And he asked me to marry him while we were on that trip. And then about 18 months later, we got married in Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had 74 people go over to Ireland for our wedding. So it was quite the scene. And it was, I mean, we of course, we got pushback, right? People said, don't do this. We're not going to be able to make it. But we did what we wanted to do, which was have a really kind of significant and memorable marriage. And so we did what we wanted to do.
Well, that is a great story.
Thanks.
I appreciate that spirit.
Where'd you get married?
I got married in Cornelius. So
where in Cornelius? At the Peninsula Club?
Actually, I got married in Davidson at the Davidson College.
Oh, that's cool. It's beautiful there.
Yeah, we had a lovely ceremony, and all of our family was there. And then we went off to our honeymoon, and I think we went to
Talladega.
No, we got married in November, so we had a nice trip to somewhere tropical.
Oh, I don't remember.
Which is probably why I'm not married anymore.
We went to Paris on our honeymoon.
I don't know where I went. I went to Turks and Caicos.
There you go.
Bermuda. I don't know. Well, you went to Italy and
well,
Rome,
Paris. And so Paris. I would actually recommend, like, I think it was hard doing a honeymoon in Paris, somewhere where you feel like you have to go sightseeing because you're exhausted, right? Mm-hmm. You've just hosted this huge party and all you want to do is lay on the beach and have some beverages. And Paris, I think, was really tough for us because you did feel like you had to get up and go see this and you had to see that. And all we wanted to do was, like, lay around.
I went to the Virgin Islands.
Well, they're beautiful. The British Virgin Islands or the U.S. Virgin?
BVI.
Oh, so I love it
yes.
down there.
We had a great trip. So now you have twins, two of them?
Yes, that would be twins, yes.
Both of them are twins?
Identical twin boys. They're 9 years old. It's crazy. You know, it goes by so fast.
That's what I want to ask you about. I mean, we'll get into your Ironman, and I know how much you train, how hard you work, your job with Fox, covering NASCAR, and obviously on the sideline of football games. To me, if someone told me that, I would say, well, how does she do it? Mm-hmm. How do you do it? How do you balance your family and your husband and NASCAR and football and extensive training? I mean, you're training for an Ironman. That's crazy.
Yeah, I have to, right? So I think a lot of this, honestly, Michael, stemmed from being in New York during September 11th. And I've told this story before, that the impact that moment and that event had on me was realizing how many people put things off for another day or another week, then they walked into that building to go to work that day and didn't come back. So I think the impact it had on me was that I'm never going to put something off for something else. And so if you want it all, you have to do it all, right? And I wanted kids and I wanted a career and I wanted to do more than just work and be a mom. Actually, the Ironman stuff is sort of what fills my cup. I talk to moms all the time, right, that say that they are constantly filling other people's cups. And what is it that kind of does it for them? And that's what does it for me. It's really important. I don't do it because I want to. I do it because I have to. It sort of kind of keeps me balanced. And, I mean, growing up when I was a kid, I had zero guidance. Zero. I grew up in a single family home with a mom that worked three jobs in the 90s. You know, we walked home and put our, you know, we had a Nintendo for our babysitter. We had zero guidance. We got in a lot of trouble. And I feel like the Ironman and triathlons are what keep me on a straight path. It's the structure that I need in my life at this point.
You know, as crazy, as different as we are, it's my story's a lot the same. I was a race car driver. And I wanted to be the best race car driver I could be. In order to be that race car driver, I started running because I knew that was time for me to focus on my job. It was time for me to say, I'm getting better. I'm going to be a better racer because of what I'm doing. And it started out literally, me and a buddy ran 1 mile out and back. And a year later, we ran our first marathon. And I ran four of those simply because of what you're saying.
But don't you think it gave you structure as well?
Exactly.
Like, I have to get up tomorrow morning and I have to put in these miles. So I'm not going to go out with my buddies tonight. I'm not going to stay up past, like, whatever time. Like, I have to be responsible within those parameters. And I feel like that does it for me.
I love that. And that's exactly what I used running for mm-hmm. when I was training and racing. And so I appreciate that. And I understand it. Crazy enough that's where you are. But tell me about training. You talked about getting up at 5 or 6 in the morning to what are you going to do?
Yeah, I was up at 4:30 this morning, actually, to get on my Peloton bike because I knew that my day was so busy. And if I didn't get up and I didn't get it in, then I wouldn't have time. And that's just what it is, right? It's getting up. It's getting up to run. Sometimes, obviously, it's hard. I get a little nervous being a woman, you know, going out at 4 a.m. running. So
yeah,
I'll have
I'm just
to,
coming home. You never know.
I know. Or riding your bike. I tell people all the time, like, they're like, ride on Saturday mornings. Like, I'll go out really early on a Saturday morning. I don't mind getting out there at like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm lit up. I have plenty of stuff. But then you do when you see that random car, you're like, all right, where are they coming from?
Right.
But
I hope they're going to, not
yes,
coming from.
Yes, going to church. I hope they're going to church. I do it, right? I find the time and I do it. And it's self-discipline at the most extreme level.
And so let's talk about discipline. You have to be prepared to do the hub.
every day with Adam, and there's very smart, relevant folks that come on to the hub, and they have intimate knowledge about what happened over the weekend. You obviously have to be well versed in their world as well. How? Let's just take that piece of the puzzle first. We get up at 4:30 and we run. We maybe get home in time to take the kids to school, or at least make them breakfast. Then do we study? Or how did we get ready for this this job that you have with Fox?
Well, I think, I mean, you can relate, right? You've been in this industry for a really long time. When you're in NASCAR, you live it. You're part of the lifestyle of NASCAR. So you're constantly around the storylines. You're constantly, I mean, every weekend at the track. I mean, I spent, you know, 10 years at the racetrack there Friday through Sunday. There were weekends where I would interview drivers and see them more than I saw my husband that entire week. And so you're constantly just around it. I feel like NASCAR is a little easier to cover because of that, because you're so embedded with the sport. When I go and do NFL, you know, and say I have to cover the Bears and it's week 8 and I haven't seen them all season long, and yeah, you kind of know what's going on, and you know the key players, but you certainly don't know the inner workings of what's been going on within that organization. And so I find those to be a little bit more strenuous in terms of studying. Same with when I'll jump in to do college basketball. I did one college basketball game this year, like one Villanova game. I hadn't seen them in a year.
Yeah.
And so you have to be prepared, and it is about managing your time. But you can get this, right? So you're the race car driver. You're the face of that team, but you know that there are a lot of people that are working a hell of a lot harder every single day, whether it be 15, 16, 17 hours to get that car out on the racetrack. And I want to do my role to make sure that those people don't think all that hard work was in vain.
Yeah.
And you can understand that, can't you?
Oh, certainly. You want to make sure that you, it's so crazy to try to explain to fans what all goes into this, and the countless, endless hours of prep on the car, and the individuals that make that car go fast. You know, it's Kevin Harvick behind the wheel, and there's literally hundreds of people that are tuning on that car to make that happen. And so to have an appreciation for that and try to explain that to the folks at home, it's interesting, because if you think about NASCAR, you basically got 40 guys that you got to figure out on the track on the weekend. And so I think of that as being fairly simple. But then you talk about doing Villanova basketball game that you hadn't seen in a while, and they're playing, you know, whoever they're playing, Georgetown or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now you're up to 24, 25 people that you really haven't seen much of.
Mm-hmm.
To me, we see the same guys every week. That's pretty easy. But to be versatile enough to appreciate all the folks that support the players on the court or the drivers in the car, and then be able to expand your knowledge about everything that goes into it, that's pretty impressive.
It's about relationships. I mean, from day number one, when I stepped foot into the NASCAR garage back in 2007, when I knew this many people, you know, I knew Marty Smith, and he and I got hired at ESPN at the same time. And I give him a lot of credit, because he did take me under his wing, introduced me to a lot of people. And I think people were a little more patient with me because they knew I was friends with him. And I stayed in the garage late, and I asked crew chiefs if I could come and ask them a question about camber or, you know, track bars or cowls or whatever, because I didn't know the answers to those things. And I feel like those relationships, whether it be in NASCAR or in college football and college basketball, I will go to as many practices as a coach will let me go to, because I want to show that coach that I have as much respect for his program as he does. I'm not just going to show up and mail it in. I'm going to put in the time. And I really think over the years, that's gone farther than any kind of prep that I can do in reading stats, is just building those relationships and that respect.
I mean, it's a chance for me to do prep. Mm-hmm. At 6 o'clock on Monday night, if I'm not on the show, I'm watching the show, and the players, the folks that were a part of the drama that played out on the racetrack, are right there telling you what happened.
There's no show like it. There's no show in the NFL that has Tom Brady on the show, you know, like a Chad Knaus when he was winning, or like Joey Logano, he's fresh off victory lane. He comes on the show on Monday or Tuesday. There's nothing like it.
And to me, there isn't. And it's the perfect opportunity for me to spend an hour a day and find out what's going on in my world, and to be more knowledgeable as a as an insider, can you imagine what that means to the fans? If I'm watching and I'm learning, that's so great that the hub is there and you guys host it and welcome in the stars of our sport and get the stories.
And that's what's so cool. I mean, I love watching you and have great respect for what you've done over the years because you have been in this sport for so long, but you're constantly still growing and constantly trying to improve what you do every single weekend, whether it be in the booth or on Hub. And that's, I mean, again, I think you recognize, like people recognize when people work hard and they also recognize when people don't work hard. And so, yeah, I mean, I have a great deal of respect for you because of just how hard you work. I mean, people see you on the grid walk, right? And they don't realize that that's just like, that's a part of what you do. Like what you do, your knowledge and your just continuing knowledge of growing of the sport is pretty incredible.
You know what? I love the grid walk because it gives me a chance to go down on the pit road and before the cameras come on say, hey, Bubba, do you mind if I talk to you about your nephew? And
mm-hmm.
or and I find William Byron and say, is your dad here? You know, those things, that's...
And only you can do that, by the way. Like, well, like if one of us tried to do that and tried to be like this goofy character running up to drivers right before they got in the car, it wouldn't work. And so, I mean, it works because it's you.
Well, it's certainly a lot of fun. Tell me about your daily schedule once you get done running at 4:30 in the morning. And I guess I'm basically asking, when do you get to Fox and what all goes into getting here for that 6 to 7? You don't show up at 5:30, I know.
No, I do get my kids up. So my kids get up about 6:30 every morning. I get them up and I get them out the door. A lot of times my husband will drive them to school just because it's on the way to his work. But I do get them up and get them fed and all of that stuff and get them out the door. And then, you know, I take some time for myself, whether I have to do doctor's appointments or if I have to do something for myself, like personally. Today I took my car to get an oil change and had to do some random things. Or sometimes I'll wait till after the boys are out the door to go for my run or to go and do something. And then we get here about noon. A lot of times I'll get here a little bit earlier, about 11:15, 11:30. I like to kind of get settled. If I want to read over the quote sheets from Sunday, or if I want to do just some like searches about specific things, start to prep for the weekend, I can do that. We have a meeting from noon to 1, and then I usually get in makeup at 1:30. With our new digital set, we actually have to pre-produce some things, just some things, and so we a lot of times have to be on set at 3:45, which is pretty early. It wasn't that early in our old studio. So I'm makeup at 1:30, usually done by 3:15 and on set by 3:45. I have a little bit of time after we pre-produce those things before the 5 o'clock rehearsal, because we do start rehearsing at 5, that I can kind of do some things that I need to do. But I'm also like, you know, I'm scheduling lunches for the kids. I'm booking doctor's appointments for the kids. I'm right now organizing camps, summer camps for the kids, scheduling babysitters. Like I'm not just here. Like there's a lot of other things. I'm mommy, right?
Right.
Like, so mommy's
busy.
Their role is pretty extensive.
And let's just take today, for example. We had an awesome all-star Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. We did.
The opens, finishes were everything you hoped for, and then the way those boys raced in the all-star race. What was your takeaway as a reporter on what you saw Saturday night?
I thought it was a great race. I have said a million times that I felt like last year was lightning in a bottle because it was so amazing, and I feel like this year lived up to it. I really, really am drawn to the stories of the Open, though. And I know that there's, you know, some drivers that are like, we shouldn't be doing the Open. You know, it should just be the All-Stars. But I think for a guy like, I mean, look, Bubba, for him to get into that,
what
to that
great
race,
night.
Amazing. Right? Because you know what he's been going through, and you know how hard that is, right? And and for him to have this little shot in the arm and this little validation, great. William Byron, right? You don't think Chad Knaus didn't want to be in that Open. You know, he's been in the All-Star race, you know, 18 years in a row. You know, I'm sure it was hard for him to have to set that car up for that Open. And then he was able to get in. Kyle Larson, you know, a guy who has second place finishes, and we talk all the time about these missed opportunities, and for him to go and capitalize on the opportunity, it was pretty incredible. It was an incredible night, I think. I think it's great momentum for the 600.
I do too. And you know what I take out of it most is that, you know, Larson obviously wins the million-dollar check and the big night for him, but he knows he's got it. He knows he's good. He's going to win. My favorite thing about Saturday night was Bubba. because he had been challenged so much with the way the car had performed and the lack of results. And then not only to drive that car on old tires and get that win in that stage, but then top five in the All-Star race. That has to make him – I bet he's walking around with a real skip in his step this week, knowing what he accomplished and knowing – those are the best guys. He beat most of the best on Saturday night, and that's got to be a good sign for him and that team.
But not only that, I mean, also with the way that the first stage ended, right? Getting beat.
Yeah.
Like, you could tuck your tail and go hide, right? Your car's got a little damage. You just got flat out beat. You could get discouraged, and he didn't. And I mean, the Kyle Larson thing, like you said, he knows he's going to win. Isn't, I mean, after a while, though, of not winning and people telling you that you should and not winning, I mean, that's gotta wear on a guy a little bit, right?
Do we give Jeff Gordon the credit? He took him to that
yeah, I know.
soothsayer. Or
that place is going to be the biggest, busiest fortune. Place in Dover when we go back.
He has been on it ever since they left there.
Every driver in NASCAR is going to make a stop at that place on the way to Dover.
I'm gonna ask you a question. I'm going to preview the 600 from my eyes. I don't see it looking much different than the All-Star race. I think those changes to the cars were minimal. I think the rules that we raced with in the 2019 cars at Kansas, they're going to be the same. The only thing I'm worried about is being able to run wide open and run that close together because of the temperature. It's definitely going to be slippery and hot when they start. Does the sun setting make the track get better and the cars race closer together? What are you looking to see? And another thing, I listened to SiriusXM this week, and Todd Gordon was on there, and he's like, there's four races Sunday night. We've got 400 lappers, you know, because we have to have those stage points, and we can't wait for our car to come to us. We have to be adjustable and ready to race from the time they say go. And with the dominating performance we saw from Truex 3 years ago, and then what Kyle did last year, then stick in between those two races, Austin Dillon leading, what, two laps?
Yes, the end.
What do you expect? I don't think there's anything that history tells us we can't expect. What do you think we'll see?
Yeah, I think with the 600, I think you have to realize that it is a 600-mile race, right? And I feel like when you come off of something like the All-Star, where every lap is like, hold your breath, hold on, because of the format, I think the 600, I mean, it's attrition, right? It's a marathon. Like, when you start off in your marathon, you're not blazing a trail at mile 7. You know, it's who can survive, and it's about the process. And there's going to be so many story changes, and there's going to be so many storylines, and then maybe it does come down to a fuel mileage situation at the end. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe we do have a guy run away with it. But I mean, I feel like over the past this season, there's really, I mean, with the exception of maybe Martinsville, right, where just Brad Keselowski was the class of the field, like, even when you have a Kyle Busch or a Kevin Harvick who have the best car, something's been happening during that race that changes the whole complexity of the race. And so I don't think you certainly can't try to guess what's going to happen in a 600-mile race, just like you can't guess what's going to happen when you run 26.2. It's the longest race of the season. It's actually – I haven't worked one in a really, really long time, and we'll be here, obviously. But I just – it's a long night.
I will predict, from what I saw in the All-Star and what I saw at Kansas, there won't be a dominating car.
You don't think so?
Sunday night. I think it's going to be very competitive. And the finishes are usually dictated by when the last caution flies. You know, if you have a caution with 10 to go, there's going to be people that do pit. You're going to have craziness. I just feel like we're going to see a really competitive, interesting 600. Because
you think there'll be a lot of passing?
I think so.
Really?
And I believe that for a couple of reasons. I saw a lot of speed from Joe Gibbs Racing, particularly Kyle. But also you saw how fast Kevin was, and Clint was on the pole. So those two organizations
and Hendrick, I mean, at Kansas, right? I mean, how do you – I know Kansas is a different kind of animal, right?
I don't know. I don't think it's that different.
Just wider.
Yeah, I think – I'm thinking because of what I saw at Kansas. Yeah. I'm optimistic that's what I'm going to see.
I feel like that we knew coming into the season, right, there were going to be some teams that just really hit on this package. And I feel like Joe Gibbs Racing and Penske did that.
Yeah.
But I feel like Stuart Haas Racing and Hendrick Motorsports are absolutely catching up. And how cool would it be to maybe see, like, Alex Bowman break through and get that win, you know, because he's been so close.
And
or Jimmy, right? I mean, I've been picking Jimmy. Like,
that's where I was going to go.
Every week I pick Jimmy.
Yeah, I love Jimmy Johnson, and I know y'all – y'all have a lot in common. He just finished the Boston Marathon.
As well as you. You did Boston.
I did that 100 years ago. But he's also a triathlete.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a big event coming up. We're gonna run the marathon of NASCAR, mm-hmm. the Coca-Cola 600 this Sunday. And we know what a challenge that is physically for the drivers with the heat and the focus that they have to have. You're training for something equally as impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, I got two half Ironmans this year, so I'm going to do one in July.
Does that make a hole or not?
It doesn't. I wish. I trained for a full one last year, and I was 2 weeks away from the event when Hurricane Michael hit the area and just destroyed Panama City. So they had to cancel the event. And again, like another reason why I really enjoy doing this is because I do feel like it helps me relate to the athletes that I cover,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I know what it feels like to be ready for an event, maybe like you guys, right? Like you go out there, you practice all weekend, you do the whole thing, and then like lap one, you get in a wreck. I know what that disappointment's like to not be able to really kind of show what you are capable of, what you've trained for, what you've prepared for. I also know what it's like to deal with injuries. I know what it's like to be in the zone. Because all those things I deal with. And so I feel like it helps me kind of relate to whether it be NFL players or NASCAR players. But I do have 2 70.3s this year that I'm doing, and I'm also raising some money for the Ironman Foundation. And people always say, what's the Ironman Foundation? Well, we go into these racing communities where we race, and we give back to these communities. So Panama City, we'll go in and we'll build homes for people who lost their homes in the hurricane. We did that in Santa Rosa, which is in Northern California, last year. We built homes for people that lost their homes in the wildfires. We teach kids who have disabilities how to surf. We build bikes for inner city kids. So there's a service project in about, I think I would say we do about 8 to 9 a year. And then we also give money to the nonprofits in those racing mm-hmm. communities. And so this is the second year in a row that I've done this auction because I thought rather than just begging people for money, I can reach out to people like you, right? People that I know in sports and ask them for an autograph, ask them for something that I can then sell and I can raise money. And I had 50 something items donated to me this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Last year I had like 20 something. And so it's, my goal is $20,000. I raised 14 last year. So I'm hoping to hit the 20,000 mark. And you were nice enough to donate a book that I'm going to put on the eBay auction today as this runs. I didn't want to release everything at one time because I was afraid I would, you know, saturate the market. I actually had a pair of Clint Bowyer's gloves that are now up to $1,600.
Are they the ones he punched
no.
women with?
I wish. Wouldn't that be awesome? They'd probably be worth a lot more. But as soon as like this weekend happened, I was like, yes, more money for the foundation. Yeah, so
the foundation is an awesome cause that you're able to affect and help folks that
Thanks.
In the areas where you travel.
It's so it's the Ironman folks, Michael, like the people that I've met along the way are so inspiring to me. And it's not just the elite athletes, because obviously what they do is incredible. I use this buddy, my buddy Mike Ergo, I use him as an example all the time. So he is a Marine, lost like 25 of his soldiers in the Battle of Fallujah, had extreme PTSD when he came back and found triathlon and Ironman. He runs either the half or the full part of the run carrying a flag. I mean, like a huge flag on a flagpole, and then he gives that flag to a Gold Star family as he crosses the finish line. I've met the Peace Brothers who live in Atlanta, the Atlanta area. One of them is quadriplegic in a wheelchair, and his brother drags him in a little boat, rides with him on a double bicycle, and then runs with him in a specially designed like a wheelchair. And so I sit here and I go, I'm tired. It's 4:30 in the morning. And then I realize these amazing human beings and the perseverance and the heart,
heart
that they have. And that's what inspires me. So for me to be able to be part of this, I feel like I'm not worthy to be part of it because the incredible stories that these people and what they've had to overcome. I'm not saying like I have none of that. So I do what I can. I host a banquet every year, and I get to sit up on stage and interview some of these people and help them tell their stories. And I walk out of that event and my heart is full.
Yes.
And that's like, that's why I do it. Like, that's why I'm so passionate about it. We all work, right? We're parents. We work. What do we do for us? What do we do to fill our cup? And this is what I do.
Well, my heart's full right now listening to that story. It's so, so sweet. And you know, you see pictures of guys pushing their brother or their cousin or their uncle in a wheelchair. And the pictures, you know, they're meaningful. But to hear you tell the story of knowing people that do this and why they do it, it's very touching.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm very blessed I'm very blessed to have found it. And so I do what I can. And I mean, this auction is a lot of work, right? I'm doing 2 or 3 interviews every single day, radio interviews. You know, I'm constantly responding to people who are asking questions. I had to reach out to everybody to get all of these items. It is a lot of work, but it is worth it to me because I can give back to the foundation and I can give back to something that means a lot to me.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing it.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
How do we specifically tell people to go? I'm going to go bid on Boyer's gloves for sure.
And there's a lot of stuff on there. I have Jimmy Johnson shoes. Your brother, Van Collie, just sent me one of Daryl's helmets, this really cool poster of one of his wrecks that's signed in the car. You would probably know where it was. Is that where it was? The car was like.
Or Daytona.
I mean, the car is literally coming apart.
Right.
I'd have to show you. I could show you on my phone. And then he also gave me a die cast, like a Mercury from, I don't even know what year it is. Here,
75.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
here, let me see.
95.
Let me see. It's on my phone here. Let me see if I can find it. Yes. Yeah, so it's the not yet is a number 95.
Terminal transport.
71 Mercury Cyclone. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So
who
I have that signed.
Mercury?
And then this picture, is that Pocono?
No, that's Daytona.
That's Daytona.
I think.
Yeah. So it's
crazy about a Mercury.
Yeah, so those things will be up soon. And so, like I said, I have signed shoes and I have signed gloves.
Book.
I have your book. Yes, I have your book. I have a Dale Earnhardt book. Oh. Dale Earnhardt Jr. signed a book. I have reached out to Mike Davis, and he sent me that. I also have a die cast from Jr. that I'll release. And got some Cars 3 stuff and
Shannon
football stuff.
Spoke.
Football stuff. I have NFL stuff, too. It's not just NASCAR. College basketball. I have Kentucky. Calipari signed basketball.
I was going to ask you about. How did you get to be Shannon Spoke? Your kids think about that?
They thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
They could care less.
You're a movie star, right?
They could care less about anything else I do. But when I'm in Cars 3, it was pretty cool. They called me up. And actually they tweeted me. They reached out to me on Twitter, direct messaged me and said, hey, our boss would like to talk to you about a role in Cars 3. And I was like, on the phone with him. And
something good comes from Twitter.
There, yeah.
It's taken all this time. So I'm asking again because I want you to say it. How do you log on? Where do you go to your... to bid on these items, because I want to write it down.
So you go to eBay, and so if you just go to eBay.com and go into the eBay search engine, you can put Shannon Spake, and those items will come up. But the direct link is eBay.com/USR/Spakers. So,
there you go.
All the items are there, including your book.
I'm thankful that you included me in your auction.
Well, I thank you for donating it. Yeah,
it means a lot to me that you shared your story today on my podcast, and if you would like to sign up and register and listen to my podcast.
I've done.
You can go to favorite podcast app.
You know, I listen to podcasts when I'm running and riding. That's all I listen to. So,
well,
I'm going to have to do
that.
It.
I'm thankful and I'm happy you came.
So that wasn't that scary, right?
Which part?
You said that you were a little nervous when we first started. Were you just blowing smoke?
No. Like, you can say I'm almost crying listening to those stories about those soldiers, the heroes of this country. Memorial Day weekend. I mean, I don't see how we can't really blow out raising a lot of money on your auction, because I mean, this is all about patriotism this weekend, and you touched my heart. I appreciate that.
Oh. Well, we'll have to get you out to a race, and I'll be able to introduce you to some of the people that I've met. You'd really enjoy that. Yeah, the Peace Brothers, they are huge sports fans, and they definitely know who you are. So maybe when we're in Atlanta. Yeah. We'll get him out there.
I'll definitely come to the end.
The end of the race, right. Yes. Yeah, that's the best part, right?
Right. Thanks, Shannon.
Of course.
Wow. I am inspired. I just love Shannon Spake. I love who she is and all that she has going on and her stories of the folks that compete and the commitment that people make to be a part of the Ironman community. And then the giving, her auction. Please, please go on eBay and search Shannon Spake and buy some items. Get those gloves. You can tell people those are the ones Clint was punching with on Saturday night. Or you can buy my book. I hope you'll enjoy it. Thanks so much again for watching, listening to Waltrip Unfiltered. Please tell your friends to go to their favorite podcast app. Give us a 5-star rating and sign up and listen to us next week. We're going to have another great show. It's been so much fun getting to know people inside of NASCAR. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.